I needed to join, I needed to learn to sail. So Bill was the accountant for the Amateur Sailing, Sydney Amateur Sailing Club. So he talked me into joining the club. Now that was before the club had a clubhouse. And I would think that Bill Saltus, Billy Gale and myself were the only two living people that ever went to any of the old meetings down at Customs House.
I'm going to ask, it had no premises at all?
No, no premises. Down there, we used to meet in Customs House in Circular Quay.
Right.
And we used to go every at the meetings, and after meetings we'd have a biscuit. Right. So anyhow, I had to moor this little boat somewhere, and there was a fella, I don't know how I got to meet him, called Walton. He lived exactly opposite where the clubhouse is now,
right?
And he had a mooring there. And somehow or other, he had two moorings. And he said, you're going to have one of them. Where the clubhouse is now, it was an old ramshackle boat shed run by a guy called Max Imken. He's a Danish guy. He's about 76 years old. And he used to live on the premises. And I got to know old Max pretty well. I've never really said this to very anybody. And I, for fear, well, two things. I professionally became a professional secret. But secondly, I was boasting.
Right.
But if I make the bold statement that there wouldn't be a clubhouse except for me, and I'll tell you the circumstance. What happened was, the landlord and tenancy regulations from the Second World War were still in force. And where this becomes important is that Max Imken, for some odd reason, and I can't remember how, had some sub-tenancy rights to the building next door, which that was the Cremorne Club. Now, the Cremorne Club, in my day, had a rumour that both the Labour Party and the Liberal Party had their first meetings there, right? Anyhow, there were two brothers, lawyers, the McFadden boys, Matthew McFadden and his brother Tom. They became famous. It mentioned in here they had a disagreement, but in the league room they were famous because they had a fist fight in their waiting room in front of all their customers. And they were in partnership and parted company. But anyway, but he turned out to be the trustee of the Cremorne Club. They decided to evict him. Max asked me to act for him. Anyway, I managed to pull a swifty because in the landlord and tenancy regulations, towards the end of the war, you couldn't evict anybody out of found them an alternative accommodation. So I found out that he used to do as an employee, and somehow or other, some tenancy right, I can't quite work out how it happened, that name was in the regulation. And I said, well, we'll go if you find us some alternative accommodation like this. They couldn't, of course, and they pulled out. Nevertheless, no ill feelings about that. So he decides to sell the place. So he sold it to this English couple. Now, they were an interesting couple. The lady's name was Rose, and they both told me they were members of MI5. It had been in MI5 during the war. Anyhow, the place needed a lot of attention. Their company was Clover Investments. Anyhow, they wanted to sell. So the developers were around looking on the waterfront. So at the time that all of a sudden when Clover Investments wanted, They were given an order from the council to fix the place up. It's going to cost a fortune.
This was the boat shed and boat the clubhouse.
The Cremorne Club had its own lease.
Right, okay.
Details are slightly fuzzy. They had the thing out. Now, this is where the story starts. The Cremorne Club had a lease, and I was a member of the club, and I suggested to them that the club might be interested as a bidder. They would fix a price. And this was before the came along from the council. Anyway, they were working around and working around for us, and some developer came down and started talking to them. So I thought, this is an ideal site, because in the old days, be a site for the ferries to come along. Mm. It's a tea garden, but also, that was before it became really a bridge club, it was a ladies' bridge club, except there was a great big billiard table in the middle of it. Anyhow, there was going on, but finally they said, we'd like to sell and get, you know, with this developer, we'd probably offer us good money. Then the order came along from the council. In those days, the amateurs was really what we used to call the Hunter's Hill push. The Merringtons, Stuart Chambers, the Gales, etc. They were really the amateurs at the time. As it happened, the Labor Party was in power at the time, and the Minister for Lands was a guy called Jack Renshaw, who lived where? Hunter's Hill. Well, I said, well, look, why don't you see what about getting a lease? Of course, there was a lot of anti-yacht club people pinching the prime sites on the harbour. You know, this is the Jack Munday thing, you see. Yeah. But anyway, I had an offer to the railway, and Ernie Merrington was an optician, and he had his shop down lower end of Pitt Street near the railway. And I should get my specs there. And I got friendly with, and, you know, what happened to him later, he became president of YA and so on. And I said to Ernie, look, I remember going to him saying, Ernie, look, these sound like good, you know, reasonable premises. Of course, there was a committee formed looking for premises. You know, we're right opposite the squadron, Caraba.
Yeah.
There was a, and there was a lot of talk about getting a lease there and building a clubhouse. And that was just one of the places we looked at. But anyway, I said, well, we won't, you know, bring costs, and we'd save, you know, the problem of having to overcome some objection from the greenies. So, you know, why don't we consider this as a little place? And anyhow, before any offer, I managed to talk to, now today, a lawyer couldn't do this. Acting for both parties is a no-no now. Yeah. In those days, if you were a lawyer, they relied upon your integrity. The conflict, you immediately, well, I had no conflict,
yeah,
but I was acting for both parties. And that was an advantage. And I can say this, that, you know, I introduced Clover to them. Then we found out there was a whole lot of problems. Whoever drew the lease of Green Street on the parish map, well, you know where the stairs are.
Yeah.
Green Street actually, on the parish map, extends right down to the lawn on the waterfront. So therefore, a lease of public land. Ah! Anyway, we worked our way back through that. Through, not me, of course. Don't forget that John Merrington became mayor of Hunter's Hill.
Yeah.
Local council scene, very much. So one day, fortunately, the Lands Department found a way around that, shall we say.
Yes.
So finally, an offer was made. In the meanwhile, they basically almost backed off because of the work that had to be done and the cost of doing anything, and they wouldn't have been able to put anything residential down there and so on. Clover Investments agreed to a price.
What did the club do for capital, though?
Well, I'll tell you. The club had very little money. So we had meetings, and very little money was forthcoming. Members, we were disappointing. finally, we approached the bank, and the members of the committee, all of us, guaranteed the loan. And Clover Investments took the money and left.
You were already on the board then?
Yeah, director. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. As things turned out, we had all the moorings, and all the moorings were sunk. All of them.
So the moorings were part of the boat?
Well,
the
they weren't, no. We had to go to the MSB, the Maritime Services Board, as it was then.
Yeah.
And we managed to secure them. The whole process, unfortunately, from a conveyancing point of view, all this sort of started back in the late 1950s. I joined a club in 58. I joined the club even though I was doing as a solicitor for the club.
Right.
And I might say, I'm still a solicitor for the club after 74 years.
I know, I've made a note of that. You better hang on for a bit longer.
Gary's taken over a bit.
My
son Gary.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, then that was very interesting, because fiddling around with these leases, it was a nightmare. Renshaw went out of business. I think the Liberal Party came in, but anyhow, fortunately, and I must say that the Merringtons had a lot to do with it, because nothing would have or no offer being accepted, no good unless you could get the lease. And we managed to get a 28-year lease, which was heaven sent. We expected 10 years or eight or 10 years, but 28 years.
You've said association with the amateurs. You helped create the place really down there. What's the club mean to you?
Oh, everything. It's a cornerstone of my life. It's got a unique quality about it, which is not apparent in any other club. Ye old worldy. It has all the features of camaraderie and that sort of thing that you don't get in modern yacht clubs. You go to these clubs and you mix with the crew on your boat, maybe one or two other when you go down to the amateurs.